724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday at last edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Pretty gloomy weather forecast for the rest of the day and for the weekend, too. So sometimes that happens when you get into late October. Good program today. We have our regular edition of City Hall coming up first. A little bit later, we're going to be talking with a representative of National Geographic magazine. You may remember those from long ago. They still publish, and they've still got gorgeous pictures. We'll be talking with Jonathan Bailey from National Geographic. Also on the program today, a chat for a few minutes with the pastor of First English Lutheran Church in downtown Butler, Reverend Kimberly Van Driel. This church is celebrating their 175th anniversary this weekend. Quite an anniversary. Also, another candidate chat today. Last week, we talked with Mike Kelly, the Republican incumbent congressman in the 16th District seeking re-election. Today, we'll talk with Ron DiNicola, the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 16th District. So we have a lot of ground to cover here today. Let's first of all introduce our guests from Butler City Council. The mayor of the city of Butler is here, Ben Smith. Mayor, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Councilman Jeff Smith is here. Jeff, always good to see you, too.
Same here.
And Corey Roche, another member of Butler City Council, visits with us today. Corey, nice to have you here as well.
Great to be here, Dave.
Butler City Council met last night, took care of some items. You also had a very busy agenda-setting meeting earlier in the week, Mayor, that featured the appointment of a new police chief and a new fire chief.
Correct, yeah. More of a appointment of the chief, and we took a vote. The third-class city code is a vote for the fire chief based on our recommendation. So, yeah, it's great to have those individuals installed and looking forward to them starting in the near future.
Chris Switala is going to be the new fire chief?
That's correct.
Now, this is a joint chief. We've never had this before. Tell us about that a little bit here.
So, Councilman Roche, Corey, and I started meeting with the township probably in January, February, and they wanted to see about having a chief for the township and combining the three departments into one, kind of all this working together behind the scenes for a long time now. And approached us about, well, if you're looking for a chief, we're thinking about adding a chief. Why don't we see if we can't make that work in combination? And so Corey and I and a couple of the commissioners and the township manager up there just had lots of meetings, planning, met with the fire departments, individuals from them, and worked out what is still a work in progress, but we think will be a very good step forward for both municipalities.
And Chris Switala is known to Butler Township officials because he's currently their fire marshal.
He is, and that was, at least to me, it was a bit of a surprise when he applied. Not a bad surprise, but just it was good amongst all of the qualified candidates that we had to have someone that was already familiar and kind of knew the ropes a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And I think he had a long career with the Mount Lebanon Fire Department beforehand.
That's correct. Yeah.
Before he came
here. Yeah, he has experience in both volunteer and career departments, managing them, et cetera. So I think it'll be a great addition.
Now, Corey Roche, the fire chief, the joint fire chief, in combination with some things that are going on in Butler Township, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, even though obviously you're not a representative of Butler Township, but they're in the process of consolidating all of their fire departments into one.
That's correct.
They did this 5-6 years ago with Meridian and Greenwood and Lindora merging into Butler Township Fire District 3. Mm-hmm. Now the other two that remain, South Butler and Mercer Road, they're all going to merge into one too.
That's correct.
Yeah. So it was a good time for them.
Absolutely.
To approach something like this.
Mm-hmm. Huh? And it's just what's happening with volunteerism
throughout the country. It's dwindling and declining every year, and there's a need to protect the citizens during daylight hours when there might not necessarily be volunteers available. So that's the hope, we can coordinate everybody together and get a model that best serves the citizens of the city and the township.
We've seen this in a few other places already in Butler. In Harmony, I think, merged fire districts down in Winfield or somewhere. Zeeley, yeah. So it's kind of the trend these days.
Yes.
Yeah, makes sense. Mayor, when you're talking about fire chief, you recommend, but city council has to advise and consent. Is that the deal?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's important to stress that while I could have just drawn someone out of a hat and recommended them, this was a team effort. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say drawn someone out of a hat, but you get the point, that I could have just identified someone, recommended the council, and then we voted on it. But it was very much a team effort. We worked together. We worked with another municipality as well. So certainly while I had the power and authority to recommend and ask for a vote, you know, the goal was to be cooperative and work together and make sure this was not just it was more than one person's agenda.
And it was a unanimous vote, wasn't it, I think?
Yes.
Approval?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was fire chief. Police chief's a different story. That's the sole prerogative of the mayor to appoint that individual.
It is. And of course, you know, again, I could have just done it myself, but I did consult and at least discuss what was going on and what was happening with the other council members so as to make sure to have some buy-in there as well. Obviously, if I had selected someone and said, I'm going to appoint this person, I could have done that, whether or not they agreed. But I thought it was important to make sure that there was buy-in and, again, just continuing to be transparent and working together to further the goals of the city.
And the new chief is Robert O'Neill. I think I'm remembering that name correctly. Is that right?
That's correct. He goes by Bob. He's a great individual, respected by many, many people. I not only reached out to some people to talk more about him, but also had many people reach out to me when they just, you know, nothing stays secret in Butler County. So when they heard or assumed or something that there was a possibility whispering in the wind, had a lot of people reach out to me and just immense amounts of respect. I tried to find bad stuff on the guy and couldn't. So that was really encouraging.
Councilman Jeff Smith, you knew of this pending appointment and you were extremely pleased with it as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I knew of Bob when he was down in Cranberry as an officer, and people down there really spoke highly of him. And, you know, his background coming from the Housing Authority in Pittsburgh, I mean, he's seen a lot and knows a lot. He's done a ton of work with the Butler County Drug Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know that we could have found a better fit than Bob.
He was on the Cranberry Police Force for like 17, 18 years, something like that.
Correct, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I kind of smiled when I saw the story after his appointment about his family. It's kind of like that. What's that show on TV? Is it Blue Bloods? Blue Bloods with Tom Selleck, where everybody in the family is a police officer.
Yep,
that's kind of the same thing with Chief O'Neill.
That's right. He's got, I think, his dad and his grandfather both, at least, if not other
and
people in his family.
Two brothers.
Yeah. I mean, this is a joke, of course, everybody. But with a last name like O'Neill, you just figure they should be cops.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Heck, they could go on Blue Bloods.
That's right.
It could rival them.
Yeah.
So. When do these people take office or assume responsibility, or don't we know that yet?
Chief O'Neill will take office next Thursday. He's already been sworn in and everything, but his first day on the job will be Thursday, November 1st. He wanted to give appropriate time to his current department, you know, respect them and allow them to have a couple weeks to know. And then Chief Swatala, also already been sworn in, was going to give his notice. He was giving them 30 days to the township. I think that was, you know, not contractually obligated, but contractually suggested. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the exact start date there as far as the precise date, but you can assume about 30 days from Tuesday or so.
He will be, I assume. There are offices for a fire chief in the public safety building here in the city. I'm assuming, Corey, that that's where he'll work out of?
Yes, he'll be based out of the fire station.
And then, as needed and if needed, he'll be helping out in Butler Township as well.
That's correct.
Yeah. And the cost will be split, prorated along those lines, too.
Right, it'll be prorated. Kind of a, it's kind of a loose term, but pay-as-you-go kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is an experiment in some senses where we don't really have a model to look to for a shared fire chief like this for multiple municipalities. And we also aren't quite sure of the needs and demands of, you know, as the township departments move some things around, form into to one department. There may be more or less responsibilities there, varying depending on the time. So it's very much going to be this month we used them for 30 hours a week, and next month we might use them for 10. Yeah. And obviously that'll level out at some point. But yeah, so it's very much prorated on the hours spent in each municipality.
The cooperation between Butler City and Butler Township seems to be expanding, Councilman Jeff Smith. The first time that I can remember significant cooperation was in snow plowing, believe it or not, where a township crew might be on the edge of the city and they've got salt or whatever and they could just go ahead and finish a street. What would be a good example? North McCain Street, where the city line is halfway up the hill, you know. But the cooperation seems to be expanding.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing that everywhere. You know, went back to the days of the Council of Governments when intermunicipal cooperation, and, you know, this is just similar. It's two municipalities. Costs are going up for everybody. And if you're able to share a service like this, it's just a win for everyone. Mm-hmm. And all it takes is, and this was always a thing with police departments, you know, the biggest hindrance there is whose name gets to be on the side of the car. And this is one of those cases where if people can, or a municipality can check its ego at the door and say, hey, what makes the most sense for the taxpayers? It's easy to find these kind of cooperative agreements.
It's incremental because, whether you're talking about merger of a fire department or a school district, which is also happening, or post offices, you know, the Postal Service floated a plan a couple of years back to close a whole bunch of rural posts. People don't like to give up their identity, you know, whether it's their fire department or their post office or their school. But the trend is merger in all these areas, looking ahead toward the future, just from an economic standpoint.
And if your house is on fire, you're not going to complain what the name is on the side of the truck, just so it shows up.
Yeah,
so it's a good example.
So the final arrangements will continue with regard to the Joint Fire Chief, but obviously it's an amicable discussion.
Yeah, it's a great discussion. It's an amicable discussion. Corey and I will continue to confer and meet with the township individuals to, you know, how's this going? Do we need to tweak anything? Oh, we didn't expect that. There's definitely going to be bumps in the road like there is any time you try something new, but I think, overall, it's a good move for municipalities. It's a good move for the taxpayers. It's a good move for the individuals in each department. I think overall it's going to be very positive. And sure, there's going to be some times where we're like, sorry, we didn't expect that, but we know how to fix it now.
Speaking of the Bureau of Fire, Councilman Corey Roche, it looks like the city's finally going to be able to sell its damaged aerial truck.
Yes, the council finally approved the voting of the sale of the truck to an individual that has a trucking company that is going to use parts of the truck to repair another damaged fire truck in another municipality.
This is up in Conneaut Lake?
Yes.
Conneaut Lake. This fire company was hoping to buy the city's damaged aerial truck early this summer, but that deal fell through for one reason. I guess they couldn't come up with the money or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the exact reasoning was, but yeah, we did try to sell to them directly earlier in the summer.
Some folks will be familiar with this story, some won't. This is a very expensive piece of equipment, generally an aerial truck, by the way, is a fire truck that has an extension ladder. You can fight fires in multi-story buildings and so on and so forth. And the city's truck has been damaged. You know, it was a couple of years ago, I think, it got damaged. The aerial ladder is bent or something like that?
Yeah, there was a bent or a crack on the base of the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
So it proved it functionally inoperable in a fire sense. Still drivable, everything like that works. It was just you can't use it at a fire scene.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can't put a person up there at the top end of that thing three, four, five stories up with a hose if it's cracked at the bottom.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's Conneaut Lake going to do with it?
They are going to use the actual cab of the truck because theirs was damaged in an accident, a vehicle accident.
They have the same model truck?
Yes. So they will be taking the cab and putting it on their truck and putting their truck back on the road, and then I'm not sure what their plans are for the rest. They'll probably just sell part it out to other places.
Are there any definite plans in the future for the city to replace its aerial truck, its ladder truck?
Nothing yet that's concrete. We're working on several plans. We've been applying for FEMA grants when they have the opportunity to get new replacement equipment. So we've done that, and we're exploring other financing options.
What do we do in the meantime if we have a fire in a multi-story building, 3, 4, or 5-story building?
Well, we have mutual aid with the other municipalities, the township, for example. I believe we've had South Butler, Saxonburg has responded when we need ladders in the past year or so. Mm-hmm. So we'll continue to go on that route until we can find a permanent solution.
This is pretty standard procedure, no matter what municipality. If you have a big fire, there's help comes from outside, mutual aid or something like that, I think
yes.
they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no definite timetable, but the city does hope eventually to get a new aerial truck.
Yes, because it's a definite need that we have to have. So it's just a matter of time how we can figure out how to get it.
I can't imagine there's too many companies that make these. I mean, it's a pretty...
You'd be surprised. There's
really?
There are a few that have been into the station to show us trucks and just all the different aspects and design of trucks. It's not like you just go, I need a ladder truck. There's different types of ladder. The kind that have a basket at the end are called a tower. Versus the stick kind, the lengths, how it can maneuver around city streets. There's a lot involved when you're designing a truck.
You find out how many people make fire trucks when you say you need one and they all try to sell you one.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not like Ford or GMC or something like that, right? It's American LaFrance is the company that built the current truck.
Yeah, and they're no longer in business, but there's Pierce,
Chasm. Pierce, they build buses too. I know that company.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're a big one.
So specialized companies.
And just so the audience has kind of an idea, I mean, ladder trucks can be anywhere from $600,000 or $700,000 to $1.5 million, and obviously you get different features depending on what you pay for. But with the way our city streets work and trying to navigate around, and we've got a few high-rise buildings that we need to be able to. Some of them with elderly or disabled individuals inside that would not be able to climb down a ladder would need something. Mm-hmm. Really, a lot of consideration has to go into what exactly we need and the best way to go about getting it.
Mm-hmm. And we still have fire trucks, by the way.
There's yes.
Various other
we still have two equipment. Engines, rescue, brush truck, and then all the mutual aid from the other municipalities.
Mm-hmm. Talking with the three representatives of Butler City Government, the mayor of the city of Butler is here, Ben Smith, who's also a member of council, by the way, and two members of city council, Corey Roche and Jeff Smith, visiting with us here today. The city is going to get a sizable grant from the state, close to $70,000 for, I understand it, a new leaf vacuum or something, some piece of equipment like that?
That's correct. Yeah, we're required by the state to actually have one of these and provide cleanup, leaf cleanup and
I didn't know
everything.
That. It's a state mandate?
It's a state mandate, yeah. So we're not only required to do it, we're required to pay for it out of the city's pocket. So this, our old leaf vac was aging and had some deficiencies. And this grant will enable us to get the one that we need to provide the service for our residents that is, something not only we want to do, but is required of us, as well as a truck for, I believe, is it the streets department as well. So it'll pay for the vast majority of those things.
So who makes street vacs? Hoover, Electrolux, something like that?
I have no idea. I'm sure if you ask John Evans, he could tell you immediately.
I've seen the city's current equipment in action. And, folks, it really is like a giant sweeper with a humongous hose. And employees kind of push that hose around into piles of leaves, and it sucks them up into the back of a truck, hauled away for recycling.
So yeah.
That's what it amounts to.
Along with the requirement to do this kind of recycling, Actually, their state, I believe, is having us move from once-a-year leaf collection to twice-a-year leaf collection.
Really?
So those people that have the big trees where the leaves don't fall off till January will now be able to get rid of those in the spring. Mm-hmm. We actually started that last year. We offered on our own, but it's becoming a requirement.
Yeah, that's a far cry from the old days. Leaves are easily recyclable.
Just
and by the way, people in the city can gather up their own if they desire and take them down to Memorial Park, right?
That's correct. Yeah, down the leaf dump.
It's down at the far end of the park. There are signs down there, but you can take your own down if you want. Or is it time yet to start raking them out to the curb? That probably won't be for a couple of weeks, I suppose.
I think that's in November is when it starts, but...
We don't have many leaves. Now. We don't have many trees that have changed color yet, for
that's
goodness
true.
Sakes, in
yeah.
this bizarre autumn season. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I used to never look at the weather, and now I at least look at the temperature because it's been so unpredictable lately.
So what else happened at last night's council meeting? Oh, there was a pay raise approved by council for certain non-union employees whose wages had been frozen?
That's correct, yeah. Back when we looked at the budget earlier this year, we said, it would probably be wise not to give raises to the non-union employees, to the appointed individuals or hired individuals, however you want to phrase it, before we have our union contract settled. Not only from a nothing's fair, but a fairness standard, but also from a bargaining standard.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pledged that we would, those wouldn't be frozen forever. We would go back and make them comparable to how the union contracts worked out. So now that we have all three union contracts settled, and the most recent one being AFSCME, the pay raise for those individuals was comparable, equal to the pay raise for the AFSCME employees that share a job most similar to the appointed individuals who got that raise.
Mm-hmm. The Butler Area Public Library gets some money in the city budget, right? There's dedicated amount of tax dollars that go to the library every year. I understand Center Township has decided they're going to help out financially, too. Corey, you know about that, right?
Yes. I believe it was their last township meeting. A member of the library board went out and presented the statistics of how many township residents actually use the library and check out books, and compared to the other municipalities, meaning the city and the township, mm-hmm. contribute the most. And I believe Conquessing Township was contributing some money. So the township supervisors decided to start contributing to the library as well.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of a budget, the city operates on a calendar year budget, right?
That's correct.
So here we are a couple of days away from November. I assume that budget preparations are well underway?
They've started, and we have a special budget meeting November 5th at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm. You'll hear from, like, department heads, Jeff? Or?
Yeah. Well, all the department heads, the council men in charge of those departments, have been working with their departments and came up with preliminary budgets. So, for example, I turned one in for parks and maintenance. And so we'll all get together, the five of us, on the 5th to go through, compare, see if, the expectations from the treasurer on projected revenues are high enough to meet all the projected expenditures from us. And then the horse trading starts.
Mm-hmm. Are there, I'm sure there are, deadlines that have to be met? Obviously, a budget has to be approved by December 31st, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Does it have to be on public display for a while? I mean, like two votes or something like that?
Yeah, we have to, it has to be made available to the public to come in and look at it mm-hmm. prior to that. So hopefully we'll go through it on the 5th, probably have the first reading at the November meeting, and then approve it in December.
Any... preliminary thoughts? Does it look like things are going to jive, or is it too early to say?
I think so overall. There are some rough spots for us, some big expenditures with the minimum municipal obligations that were required for all of our staffing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some rough spots, but there are also some other great spots. I know each department has cut significant in certain areas. Other, you know, certain departments may also need other things, so there may be a wash on that. The overall, though, is that, you know, everybody's working together and trying to make sure that we're getting the things our departments need that will provide the best for the citizens. And so I think we'll be all right overall. We've specifically got some big expenses that we expect if we were hoping to get this grant for the multimodal, the streetscape plan and everything to come through, that would then wash that out of the budget if we get that in time and we get the amount we're expecting. So I think we'll be in pretty good shape. But we'll know more after we all sit down together. We've all talked individually and talked to our departments, but haven't really all put our heads together yet to really discuss the finer points of each other's budgets. And for me, it's important that each person kind of, I like to say, stay in your own lane. We each have departments we're responsible for. And so, you know, if Jeff or Corey or anybody else come to me and say, what do you think about this? I'll be happy to give them my opinion, unless it's something that I feel is important to the welfare of our constituents. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put my nose in their departments, just like I expect them to let me run mine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we each need to be a watchdog kind of over the whole process. But I'm looking forward to seeing each other's thoughts and seeing how things are going.
The biggest part of almost any municipality or school district or whatever these days is salaries and benefits. And you're locked in on that, right? You have new contracts with all of the various bargaining units in the city, so you know what those costs are going to be.
That's why this budget, not that it'll be easy, but it'll be easier than when we reopened it at mm-hmm. the start of the year. You know, we didn't know what the contracts were going to come in. We had to guess. Now we know what our labor costs are going to be. It just makes it a lot easier.
It's another topic I hate to bring up, but we are probably only weeks away from the first icy roads or snow. I assume the streets department has been laying in supplies of salt and anti-skid and all that sort of thing, right?
I would imagine so as well. Yeah, I don't have as much involvement with the streets department. Councilman Bonas, Ken Bonas, that's his department. But I know that he oftentimes talks about how proud of the work. That's a pretty small team, both in parks and streets. We have I think most people would be amazed to know what kind of work does get done with the small amount of individuals we have. And so I know that, you know, that department's been working hard all through the summer and will continue to do so through the winter, especially if it's a harsh winter. It's going to be a bumpy road, but no pun intended, but it should be. I think we'll be all right.
Do any of the Parks Department employees shift over to streets during the winter? Or?
Well, one of the things that the Parks guys do, and it's funny because we always talk about the Parks Department, even though they spend almost as much of their time on maintenance mm-hmm. As they do in the parks. But you know, they're responsible for clearing the snow of the parking garages. So they are involved with snow removal.
I didn't know that. I'm glad I asked that question. Yeah. Yeah, for it's not a whole lot of employees that have to cover a lot of city roads when we get a snowfall, and they're usually doing that from about 2 o'clock in the morning on. So it's tough work. Well, gosh, guys, thanks a lot. Have we covered most of the bases here? Does anybody know anything else that we need to bring up from the meeting? It was a busy week for Butler City Council. Two meetings and a lot of stuff happened at both those meetings.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the way it's been all year. Covered a lot of ground, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, nice to have you here, Councilman Corey Roche.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Councilman Jeff Smith, same
always.
Thing. And Mayor, good to see you as well.
You too.
Yeah. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with a representative of the National Geographic magazine. His name is Jonathan Bailey. And we have more to come after that, too, on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. We'll take a break and be back in just a couple of minutes. Be right back.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they were his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Dr. Catherine Szabo, practicing family medicine at Butler Health System.
Health really is a family matter. That's why I'm in family medicine. It's for families like Jessica's. As a working mom, she has a lot to juggle. So if something comes up, she knows I'm on top of the whole story. And if they need specialty care, I know the best is right nearby.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Welcome back, friends. We continue on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. By the way, coming up a little bit later on the program, we have another of our candidate chats with Election Day now. Gosh, only about a week and a half away. We'll be chatting later with Ron DiNicola. He's the Democratic candidate for U.S. Congress in the newly renumbered 16th District. But first of all, we're happy to chat for a few minutes with Jonathan Bailey, with the National Geographic magazine, about a wonderful new book that's just being published by National Geographic called The Splendor of Birds. Jonathan Bailey, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I got a review copy of The Splendor of Birds in the mail a couple of days ago. What a magnificent... First of all, it is a huge volume. It's a couple of hundred pages with gorgeous color pictures in it. Beautiful, huh?
Yeah, it is. It is quite weighty, but worth every ounce.
So, tell us what's in here. Is it photographs, or it is artwork, or is it both, or what are we talking about here?
Well, there's so many different types of bird book out this, but this one's completely unique. It's based on our archives, and it goes back to the very beginning of National Geographic, and that's 1888, and it runs chronologically from them to the present. And so we're able to explore our relationship with birds through time in North America, but then also globally. And then we're also able to see the technology and the style of photography and how that's changed through time, and you get to see some of the best naturalist photographers ever in the book. But plus it covers the stories of amazing explorers and conservationists, and documents the science as well. We knew so little in 1888, and now we know so much more about birds and their ecology, their behavior, their the way they interact with each other and their habitat needs. And then it's really an overall history of our relationship with birds. So it's different than anything I've seen. It's just really, really spectacular. The imagery is fantastic. And you have both our images and you have illustrations as well.
One of the photographers that's featured is George Shiras III, who more than 100 years ago did some photographs for National Geographic down in Florida, Pelican Island, I believe. Am I right on that?
Yes, on the Indian River. And actually, my parents lived not far from there, and so I spent my early years visiting Pelican Island, learning about birds there, and I bring my children there as well. And you can just see hundreds of pelicans on this small island, and when George started, they were almost gone. And they were being used, pelicans and other similar species like egrets and roseate spoonbills were all being used for their feathers for the hat craze. Mm-hmm. People wanted wonderful feathers sticking out of the hats. So he used to shoot birds, and then he put down his gun and picked up his camera, and he became a significant photographer for National Geographic and started the first wildlife refuge, and there's now a massive system of over 500. But he also really helped push forward the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which is what we're really celebrating this year. It's 100 years since it was signed, and it later led to legislation like the Endangered Species Act, probably the most important legislation for protecting birds. So he was quite a phenomenal individual, and had a big impact on the birds, our ability to enjoy birds today.
You mentioned legislation that I'm not familiar with, Jonathan, Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. Before that, you could, well, there was a little bit of legislation previous to that, but you for migratory birds, they were kind of open game. And after the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, it was clear that you couldn't hunt or kill these migratory species, and then a number of other birds were added to the list as well. But it was very strong legislation, and greatly protected birds in North America. And then when it led to the kind of stronger legislation of the Endangered Species Act, that's had a great impact on species, with many of them recovering rapidly.
We're speaking, listeners, with Jonathan Bailey. Mr. Bailey is the Executive Vice President and the Chief Scientist of the National Geographic Society. And we're talking about a newly published book entitled The Splendor of Birds. Migratory birds, their patterns are changing, I understand, due to climate change. I know here in western Pennsylvania, where we're located, Jonathan, I can remember when I was a kid, when you would hear Canada geese flying overhead, we'd run outside the house to see them and listen to them honking, and it was a rare sight. Now we have Canada geese all over the place here in western Pennsylvania. They've moved south. They're here all year round, and quite frankly, in some cases, they've become a bit of a problem. But their territory has changed due to climate change, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it's interesting. They're another species that was at very low numbers, but now has had a massive recovery. But many birds are having their distribution changed by changing weather patterns. And this can be documented, and people can help document it as well through citizen science tools. So there's a thing called eBird run through the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and another thing called iNaturalist, which both National Geographic and the Cal Academy support, which allows people to take images of species and upload them. And then you can use that as a data point to see where the species is found and draw a big map of all the different data points. And then you can see how those are shifting from year to year. And you can look at that in relation to climate. And we're seeing that many bird species are having their distribution change through time, which is worrying. And some species are more flexible than others in terms of changing the distribution. And some of them are more set on a certain type of habitat type than others. And those that are not as flexible or have certain components of their habitat removed are definitely declining.
Can you tell us about some of your favorite photos, Jonathan Bailey, of these incredible creatures of flight? There are tons of them in this book, The Splendor of Birds.
Yeah, so we have some of our best natural history photographers of all time contributing, and you have some of the best conservationists writing individual stories as you go through the book. But the images show things like the ivory-billed woodpecker, which probably doesn't exist anymore, and you see it just sitting on a tree, and the male and the female are just switching their time on the nest, and it's just so odd to think that our National Geographic photographers could capture this, but these species are no longer with us. We'll no longer hear the call of the ivory-billed woodpecker. It'll never switch its time on the nest. And there's a number of species like this in the book that are highly threatened or may even have disappeared already. And as you go through the book, you have the opportunity to also see some species that are recovering. And I don't want to be all doom and gloom. I mean, there's been amazing recoveries across North America, where a lot of the habitat has come back, or we've dealt with DDT, and there's been great success stories like the condor or the bald eagle or the peregrine falcon. But overall, we have about 13% of the world's bird species that are threatened with extinction, and the trends are negative. So this book is really to celebrate the splendor of birds and get people excited, but at the same time, it's a message to say we are losing some of these wonderful creatures, and we have to do more to ensure that they're there for future generations.
You mentioned DDT. We know a little bit about that here in the Pittsburgh area of western Pennsylvania, because this was Rachel Carson's hometown. In fact, there's now a bridge. There's now a bridge named after Rachel Carson over the Allegheny River in Pittsburgh.
Wow, that's a proud history.
Some of the birds that were nearing extinction or certainly wiped out in certain areas have been helped along by humankind. We have a huge state park here in western Pennsylvania. It's Moraine State Park. It's one of the biggest ones in the whole state of Pennsylvania. And several years ago, a private fundraising group decided to try to reintroduce the osprey to the large lake in the park, Lake Arthur. It's been very successful. This is a, I'm not telling you anything, of course, it's a bird that dives into the water to get fish. And it's been a remarkable success. We now have osprey nests all around that huge lake.
They're amazing creatures. And well, people often confuse them with bald eagles, but they're equally as majestic and beautiful. And they're an interesting species. They are quite flexible. If they have the food resources, they can usually make it. And they have one of the broadest distributions of all birds on the planet. So you'll find them all over the world.
Speaking of eagles, we have had, with the advance in photography and cameras and that sort of thing, we have a couple of eagles' nests here in western Pennsylvania where they have eagle cams every year where you can watch while eggs are laid and then while they're tended by the male and the female eagles and then while there's hatching and then eventually fledgling. Is this happening in other parts of the country? It's fascinating here. People tune into that all the time online.
It is. And at National Geographic, we're exploring this technology of how we can really connect people with the natural world, especially as we become more of an urban population. And you'll see in the book, the technology at the beginning is totally different than the technology at the end of the book. And we have things like critter cams, and there's an image in the book of a penguin with a large camera on its back, and then many years later, a smaller camera. And the camera is even smaller now, but we can actually see how they're moving through the water. We can now put cameras on birds and see them in flight. And so you can experience a bird, you know, through a black and white image all the way up to being able to experience it moving through time and space. And soon we'll be able to watch them moving around the globe in real time as we watch tracking devices, as they have tracking devices on them, and we watch them moving through space. There's actually a number of apps where you can follow birds and see where they're moving day to day right now. So it's a great way to feel even closer and understand the species more.
I'm sure that birders, bird watchers, will have an interest in your new book, Jonathan, but even people who aren't bird watchers, I think, could enjoy the beautiful photography and the art.
No, I mean, it's a real art form. So, I mean, you'll enjoy it if you're just an outdoors person or enjoy wildlife or love photography, but even American history. I mean, this is a piece of American history. And it's a really special slice in time of America.
Any tips for people who would like to take their own photographs of birds, amateur photographers?
Well, I think the key thing is, well, there's some wonderful lenses out there, but people just need to be very careful. If they want those high-quality images, they should invest in a tripod, and they should make sure that they're as still as possible and patient as possible. And when you shoot with a tripod and a decent lens, then you're likely to capture much, much better images. If you're trying to do it by your hand and run around without the right equipment, it gets really, really difficult. But the technology is so much better now than it ever has been, and you can see that reflected in the book as well. We have the ability to capture even the beat of the wing of the hummingbird in later imagery, which means you have extremely high high-speed film. So this technology allows us to see the world differently, which is wonderful.
Is the book, The Splendor of Birds, is it just photography, or is there text as well, Jonathan?
There's illustrations, there's text. There's text from people like Jane Goodall who talk about their experience of coming across a thing like an Egyptian vulture using a stone as a tool. So there's wonderful stories of some of the explorers of National Geographic. There's stories of some of the wonderful photographers. but then the images really speak for themselves. And there's images with people in them, and there's images of just majestic nature as well.
You talk about Jane Goodall and the story of a bird using a stone as a tool. I saw a feature on TV a couple of years ago about crows, perhaps some of the most intelligent of all birds. I didn't realize this. They actually can learn to use tools, and they had video describing it. The common phrase, someone being a bird brain, is a real misnomer, isn't it, Jonathan?
Well, definitely. We used to define humans as distinct from other species because we use tools, and then Jane Goodall went out and she saw the chimpanzees using tools, and now we're finding a whole range of species using tools, even fish, and so it's pretty phenomenal. But the crows, in particular, are able to use tools in a pretty advanced way, and it's a very special creature.
I didn't realize that National Geographic went back as far as it did, way back into the 1800s, Jonathan.
Yeah, 1888. And when it started, it was really to help us understand the world and everything in it. And it went forward, its big leap was really moving into photography. And there was actually two board members that didn't think that was a great idea. It was too populous. But National Geographic went ahead with that, and it's the greatest thing it did because it's really helped bring nature to people and connected so many of us, and so many people listening will have grown up with National Geographic and had it as an inspiration to go and explore further.
You are also a leader in conservation science, Jonathan. Can you give us a quick rundown on some of the projects you've been involved in that area?
Sure. I've done a lot in terms of defining the status of the world's species. So if you look at birds, you have 13% that are threatened, and 222 are critically endangered and so on. We've shown that since 1970 to the present, there's been a greater than a 50% decline of the world's vertebrates. That's mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, and fish. And a recent paper came out showing that if you look at the biomass of birds, like if you took all birds and you put them in one place and you divided them into two groups, one of them with 70% of the birds would be poultry and things we eat, and the other would be wild birds, the remaining 30%. And that's interesting. It's worse for mammals. It's 96% is either human or cattle and pigs, and the rest, the 4%, is humans in terms of biomass. So things are way, way out of kilter if you look at it from a strict scientific point of view. But we know we need to respond and address that, and we're doing some pretty ambitious projects here at National Geographic. We have a project called Pristine Seas, which has helped protect 5 million kilometers squared of the ocean, which is about half the size of Canada. And that's important because it helps secure area for seabirds, which are actually the most threatened group of birds that there are. And we also have a large plastics campaign, the largest media campaign to help reduce plastics getting into the oceans. And I've been out watching birds and seeing birds come back and try and feed their young a piece of plastic, and unknowingly, passing this piece of plastic to their offspring. And it's the most devastating thing to watch. So we're doing this massive campaign to highlight the importance and having people take pledges, and also doing a big expedition to explore where these plastics are coming from and how they're getting into the oceans. And we're also doing global challenges as well in terms of saying, putting a call out there saying, how do we reduce packaging, for example, in plastics? And then giving an award to the people who come up with the greatest solutions.
Birds are marvelous creatures. Some of them migrate thousands and thousands of miles each year. They're also beautiful. And you'll find no better place to look at the beauty of birds in this new volume. It's a big book. It's a gorgeous book entitled The Splendor of Birds, published by National Geographic. Jonathan Bailey has been visiting with us, talking about it. I'm assuming this book is available in the usual places we buy books these days, Jonathan?
Yes, you can go to Nat Geo Books or every place that sells books. You can order through them. It's available today, and it really is unique. And my father, who's a big birder, I've given him every bird book, but this one is totally different, so I'm excited about him having it.
Thanks, Jonathan. Nice to talk with you today. Thanks for being with us.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure. So long. Jonathan Bailey visiting with us today from National Geographic. I've I've got a review copy of this book in front of me, and it came in the mail a couple of days ago. Pat Parker, I think you brought it back to my desk, didn't you? I didn't know what it was. It is really big and heavy. I suppose, you know, use the phrase coffee table book would be a good way to describe it, but it is beautiful. And if you have anybody in your family or maybe on your upcoming holiday gift list that is a bird lover or a bird watcher, they would be thrilled to receive this book, The Splendor of Birds by National Geographic. And if you're familiar with National Geographic and their magazine, my goodness, I don't have to tell you about their photographers all over the world and the incredible work that they do and the beautiful pictures that they produce. And there are tons of them in this book. Okay, we're moving along now on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. We told you at the beginning we have a lot of ground to cover today. In just a few minutes, we're going to be chatting with the pastor of the First English Lutheran Church in the city of Butler, downtown Butler. They are celebrating their 175th anniversary with special activities and services this weekend. Pretty amazing, 175 years. So that's coming up momentarily. And then, still later on the program today, we're going to have another candidate chat. We chatted earlier this month, I was a week or so ago, maybe a week and a half ago, with Mike Kelly. Mike Kelly is the Republican incumbent congressman in what is now the 16th congressional district. It's a little confusing because it used to be the 3rd, and it used to include all of Butler County. Starting with this election coming up on November 6th, it's only going to be half of Butler County, and it's going to have a new number. It's the 16th congressional district, no longer the 3rd. So a lot of people are going to be confused. We talked with Mike Kelly, as we say, a week or so ago. We're going to talk with Ron DiNicola today. He is the Democratic candidate for U.S. Congress in that 16th district, which includes pretty much the western half of Butler County and then all the way up to Erie. It's a pretty big district. Congressional districts are pretty large. Pennsylvania has, 13 members of Congress, 18 members of Congress, and they're all up for election this year, November 6th. So that's coming up a little bit later on the program, a chat with Ron DiNicola. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller's Shoes. You know, they're celebrating their 126th anniversary. Think about that, 126 years, for goodness sakes. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Their anniversary sale is on, and boy, they've got some good prices. Shoes, boots, slippers, 20% off the regular price. Their entire regular stock, 20% off. That includes athletic shoes for all members of the family, men, women, teens, kids. And they've got a wide variety of name brands. Got all your favorite name brands in athletic shoes. We're talking about Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, ProPet, all of those brands under one roof. There's no need to go to three or four different stores. And 20% off right now, too, athletic shoes. You'll also find the Timberland shoes and boots, 20% off. Trotters, 20% off. Rockport, another famous name brand shoe. All Rockports, 20% off. Miller's Shoes, also your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes, America's favorite comfort shoes. And the entire stock of SAS, 15% off. During the anniversary sale, 126 years of serving the Butler area. That's right, since 1893, Miller's Shoes. Oh, and by the way, if you're looking for winter gear, I know, I hate to think about it, but it's just around the corner. Bad weather, snow, ice, wet. You can pick up a lot of winter gear, too, whether it's boots or overshoes or whatever. Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, now celebrating their 126th anniversary.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
On the next segment of It's Your Turn on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. If you're joining us a little bit late, we're going to be chatting for a few minutes with the pastor of the First English Lutheran Church in downtown Butler. She is the Reverend Kimberly Van Driel. Pastor, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you for calling me and for having me on the show.
Well, the occasion is a very significant anniversary for your church, which you are going to be marking this coming weekend. Tell us about it.
Our anniversary is going to be celebrated. It's our 175th anniversary, and we are going to be celebrating as God's people do with all good gifts, and that is in worship, with a festive worship service at 10 a.m., and then with a luncheon following.
And that'll be this Sunday, right?
This coming Sunday.
175 years. I don't have my calculator in front of me here, but that takes us back, gosh, that takes us back to before the Civil War, does it not?
It does. 1843 is when the congregation was founded.
Wow.
And its name, First English, testifies to the reason it was founded. Prior to our congregation's founding, Lutherans in Butler were worshiping in German. And there was a small group of people who wanted to have services in English and founded a congregation in order to do that.
That is interesting because I was talking not too long ago with the former pastor of the Butler City Catholic Churches, Harry Bielowitz, and the same thing happened with a couple of the Catholic parishes. The original St. Peter's Church had their sermons and so on in German, and English-speaking Irish people wanted it in English, so they founded St. Paul. Interesting,
oh,
huh?
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's something that a lot of faith communities go through, you know, in that immigrant transformation. They come and worship in their own language, and then, but the next generation wants to speak. The next generation wants to speak English,
mm-hmm.
and so that requires a kind of transformation. And for us, that's how that happened. So I'm often asked, why First English? You know, are you related to England? And I say, no, we're the first congregation, first Lutheran congregation in Butler to have had English services. So.
Well, this was a particular problem in the 19th century because we had huge waves of immigration back then in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Boy, 1843, did you say? Was that the date?
It was 1843, and we have been at our present location since about 1877. The congregation acquired property at the spot where we currently sit.
Mm-hmm.
There was a different building there at that time. But then in 1897, the church began to build our current building. It was completed in 1898. And then burned down in 1919 and was rebuilt.
Oh my!
There's been a couple of different, not really different buildings, but there've been several different building projects on this on the spot where we currently are.
For folks who aren't familiar with the location, First English Lutheran is a very prominent location. It's right on North Main Street, downtown, the corner of North Main and Brady Street. Beautiful church, by the way. I'm a bit of a casual student of a church architecture, and I always admired your church. I was not in it until a couple of years ago, and I must tell you, I was astonished at how big it is inside. It seems to be much bigger inside than it looks from the outside. Maybe that was just me. I don't know.
No, I feel appearances somehow are deceiving. It seems from its outside footprint it isn't that large, but inside it's quite spacious, and the sanctuary is quite spacious. And I think the high ceilings have an effect on that as well. So mm-hmm. It's a fun place to be, I will tell you that.
That's quite beautiful inside. So are you going to have special guests or something at the service this Sunday to mark the 175th?
Yes, the Bishop of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, that's the group of Lutherans to which our congregation belongs, our local area, our bishop will be with us to preside at the worship service, and he'll also be giving some remarks at the luncheon afterwards. And we've invited a number of folks back, pastors' families that we are still in touch with, and we have some folks who are coming back, people who grew up here, pastors' kids who grew up here, that kind of thing. And we're looking forward to a joyful reunion.
How long have you been at First English Lutheran, Pastor?
I have been here for 3.5 years. I started here in April of 2015.
And where did you come from before you were in Butler?
I served a congregation in the South Hills of Pittsburgh for 5 years.
So hopefully you're settling into Butler. I hope you like it here.
I do. I enjoy Butler very much. I'm very blessed to be a part of this community and to be called to this congregation.
Lutherans around the world are coming off some huge celebrations last year, celebrating, what was it, 500 years, I believe, since Martin Luther, right?
Yes, yes. The 500th anniversary of the Reformation was in 2017. So it feels pretty exciting to have had that anniversary celebration last year, which our congregation celebrated jointly with the other Lutheran congregations in our area. And then to have this celebration this year, it feels like it's just, 2 years of parties in a row.
Obviously, you weren't here way back when. None of our listeners were either. But do you know where the original location of the church was before you ended up at Main and Brady?
The first building of the church was located on North Street. It was built in 1850, and then it was used until 1877.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would have been throughout the Civil War period. Boy, it seems hard to believe that he can go back that far for a congregation. It's wonderful. Well, listen, I know you're busy getting ready for the big day. We appreciate you chatting with us. I love to keep people up to date on significant anniversaries in our area churches like this. And 175 years is certainly significant for First English Lutheran in downtown Butler.
Thank you so much.
Nice to talk with you, Pastor. Thanks for
being
with us.
Nice to talk with you, too. Mm-hmm. Take care.
Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler answers your questions about cremation. Here are the most asked questions. Should you consider cremation for your loved one? Is it appropriate for your family? How would they feel about it? What's the appropriate funeral service? And what's the cost? These are all good questions. Cremation offers three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. Thompson Miller's cremation services are right here in Butler at our own newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. Let's talk it over privately here at Thompson Miller in Butler, or call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 South of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289. Another one of our candidate chats, listeners, here on the It's Your Turn program today. I'm Dave Malarkey, and we're going to be talking for the next few minutes with Ron DiNicola. He is a Democratic candidate for U.S. Congress in the 16th Congressional District. Ron DiNicola, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for the opportunity.
I think we should start out, perhaps, just having you tell us a little bit about yourself. There will be many folks in Butler County who are not familiar with you, maybe not know all that much about you.
Well, I'm happy to do that. Thank you, Dave. Well, I was born and raised in Erie, Pennsylvania. My father was an immigrant bricklayer from Italy. My mom was the first child of young Italian immigrants, and we grew up in a traditional neighborhood in Erie, mostly Italian at that time. And we moved out of the neighborhood. My father built the house I grew up in, and unfortunately, he passed away at a young age and left my mom with three kids. So she had to go out and work and was a cleaning lady at a local high school for the rest of her life. That taught me the values of hard work and also, importantly, in our circumstance, Social Security was very important to us because it helped us stay together as a family and became a very important part of our ability to succeed and to get an education and a variety of things. When I was 17, I joined the Marines. Graduated first in my platoon at Parris Island, South Carolina. I had been an amateur fighter in the boxer in the Erie community, and I was drafted to join the competitions of the Marine Corps and ultimately won the Marine Corps championship and various other regional championships. After the Marines, I went to Harvard on the GI Bill, majored in government, went to Georgetown Law School, came back to Western Pennsylvania and clerked for a federal judge in Pittsburgh and in Erie, and then ultimately began the practice of law, which I have done pretty much since. I took a stint away from the law practice and worked with a publicly traded company in New York, came back to the practice of law. I did run for Congress once before in a district similar to the current district that included Butler County. I lost a very close race by a point or two to Representative Phil English. And in the last many years, I've been involved in projects in the community where I reside, which is Erie, focusing primarily on education issues, expanding pre-K education for kids, working on post-secondary educational opportunities, including the formation of a community college in northwestern Pennsylvania, which is we had not had, and ultimately passed county council and the county executive is now in Harrisburg for further consideration. I served as county solicitor in Erie County in the past, and I also have represented workers in the region who have thousands of workers who were lost their jobs as a result of foreign competition and were twice denied benefits by the federal government. I took their case and obtained a reversal of the Labor Department's ruling, freeing up millions of dollars for working families in the region. I decided to run for Congress after the Supreme Court decision earlier this year. It was not a planned decision. It was brought on by the creation of a more competitive district that allowed for a potential competitive race, which I think it has become. And I think that kind of brings us up to where we are today, Dave.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this district because it has been reconfigured a bit, twice, in fact, within the past decade, and now it's been renumbered. So there's a fear that some voters might be a little bit confused about this when they go to the polling place on November 16th. First of all, the new number for the district is the 16th. It used to be the 3rd. Now it's the 16th Congressional District. And it generally includes the western half of Butler County, the western half of Butler County, and then all the way up to Erie, right?
That's correct, which would be Lawrence, Mercer, Crawford, and Erie.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of exceptions. There's a handful of precincts in Cranberry that are in another district, but for the purposes of our conversation, mostly the western half of Butler County is now in this district. What do you see as key issues, Ron DiNicola, in this race? A couple of them, I should think, would be Medicare and Social Security. There are some who seem to think that due to the tax cut plan approved at the end of last year and the exploding deficit, that Trump administration officials will try to cut back on Medicare and Social Security, perhaps.
Well, those are certainly priorities, Dave, and I'd like to talk about those. But I think there is one issue that has been prevalent in the region that is what I call a portal issue, an issue that is more systemic and allows for us to tackle some of these tougher problems. And that issue is the concern among the widespread concern among Western Pennsylvanians that Congress is not working for them. They have been shut out of the process, that Congress is essentially dominated by special interest money and by gerrymandered districts that have created safe seats for incumbents, which makes them less accountable, less willing to reach common sense compromise, less willing to deal with one another in a civil, constructive way. And I think they're right. And so a portal issue for us is to try to get Congress to become more functional and put it back on the side of the working families of Western Pennsylvania and the communities that are fighting for sustainability in this region. So I think that's a portal issue, and I think I just want to add that to the mix.
What about health care?
Well, yeah, I think the reason we haven't been able to tackle health care, which is a prime and perhaps the most important substantive issue, is because Congress has been unable to come to common sense compromise on how best to address the issue. And that's in part due to the fact that my opponent and many others in Congress are taking large sums of money from the pharmaceutical industry, large sums of money from the health insurance industry, and it goes on from there. Certainly, we have as a top priority creating a health care system that provides quality, affordable health care that can be acquired by our citizens, that provides, protection from pre-existing conditions and the like. That's a problem I think we can address if we had bipartisan common sense compromise in Congress to get that done.
What about campaign finance reform, Ron DiNicola? Do you have any thoughts on that issue?
Well, that's a core issue. That's the core issue that goes to the portal issue that we just discussed a moment ago. And I've issued a plan in this race that would involve pushing back on the Citizens United decision that opened the floodgates to corporations to make contributions to political campaigns, and also the Disclose Act, which would require transparency in the donations made or the contributions made by the 501c4s and others who are contributing unlimited amounts of money into the political process without identifying the donors of those funds and the amounts of those funds. So I think, again, this goes right to the core of the integrity of Congress itself. And when Donald Trump was talking about cleaning up the swamp, I think this is exactly what he was talking about. And we have to make good on that promise. And that is, we do have to clean up the swamp. We need to make Congress more accountable. We need to close the multinational corporate tax loophole and get Congress back on the side of working Pennsylvania families.
It's the U.S. Senate, of course, that confirms Supreme Court justice nominees, not the House. But I do have to ask you if you have any thoughts on the recent hearings and subsequent confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, Justice Kavanaugh is now officially seated in the court and has acquired, as he should, all of the all of the responsibilities and power associated with the office. In terms of the underlying consideration of his nomination, I think that my observation is that Congress should be able to handle these kinds of proceedings in a much more civil way, in a much more cooperative way, with less rancor. These are important issues facing our country, and sometimes there are facts that are dealt with that are unpleasant, but that doesn't mean that our representatives have to behave in a way that is unpleasant. So I think the big takeaway here is that we need to create greater civility, greater common sense, collegiality in the body, and be able to deal with the tough issues of our time without rancor and without unseemly division.
We're jabbing listeners. If you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're chatting with Ron DiNicola. He is the Democratic candidate for U.S. Congress in the 16th Congressional District in the coming election on November 6th. Let's talk a little bit about the issue of immigration. There are a lot of people who think it's time we took another look at our immigration laws, perhaps some immigration reform. However, Congress has been unable or unwilling to do this for several years now. And as a result, we've had a series of executive decisions from the White House dealing with immigration because, as many people think, Congress has not done its job. What are your thoughts on immigration? Do you think Congress has to get at it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Again, we're talking about a Congress that is not working, a Congress that is the captive of the special interests, a Congress that is very much a part of the swamp that President Trump is trying to clean up. And if I get to Washington, I'm going to try to work with him to get that done. And one of the ways that we get that done is to try to clean up the system of campaign finance and also reach common sense compromise. We have laws on the books relating to immigration that are not being enforced. We need to have strong borders, a strong border policy, but we also need to have comprehensive immigration reform. And this is something that, again, if we want to tackle the problem, we can get done with common sense problem solving.
What do you think about the President Trump's renegotiation of some of America's trade deals, most recently NAFTA, which he scrapped and negotiated the new agreements with Mexico and at the last minute Canada? What do you think about some of these new trade agreements?
Well, I have long been someone who has voiced great concern about NAFTA as it existed, and I think it's important for the president to be pushing for fair trade agreements. I think that's very important for Western Pennsylvania. He opposed the Korea trade agreement that my opponent championed in his first term in Congress. He called it a job killer. My opponent, Mr. Kelly, supported that agreement primarily because it benefited his private business, and it also cost us hundreds of thousands of jobs, and it hurt Pennsylvania farmers. I've been a longtime proponent of fair trade agreements, and I will support the president on the implementation of fair trade agreements. I also support the president on his China policy because the Chinese have been ripping us off for years, and we have to bring them to task on that. Also by enforcing our laws that are on the books on anti-dumping and also currency manipulation. I support the president on his policy of making our NATO allies pay their fair share of our shared defense. I think that's prudent. At the same time, I think we need to do it in a way that takes into account that they are our allies and they've fought side by side with us at the Battle of the Bulge. So we have to do it in a way that is respectful, of course. But nevertheless, I think those are policies that make sense.
Any thoughts on the regulations that are being removed in some governmental departments? Let's talk particularly about the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA.
Well, I think that we need to have a process for the reevaluation of regulations as they relate to industry and commerce, and take into account new technologies, so that we have a system that isn't overly burdened with needless regulation. I'm a big proponent, though, of common sense regulation that protects our citizens, protects our health and well-being, protects our natural resources. On the issue of the environment, let me just say that I think Western Pennsylvania is well-positioned for the new migration patterns that are going to be taking place in this country, where people are going to be looking for open spaces, greeneries, forests, rivers, lakes, and streams, affordable housing, good schools. And I think Western Pennsylvania needs to be in a position to compete in that new investment opportunity, that new migration that's taking place. So I think we need to be vigilant on the environment because we have rich natural resources. And that's what attracted our forebears to this region and this area. So I don't think we can forget about our environment. I believe that that's an important priority.
A couple of more questions for you before our time runs out. There are a number of political pundits who have predicted a higher than expected turnout for the upcoming election, mainly because so many people see it as a referendum on Trump. Do you have any thoughts on that, Ron DiNicola?
Well, I don't see it as a referendum on the president. I see it as a referendum on the Congress. I think I'm running against Mr. Kelly. I'm not running against Mr. Trump. As I've indicated, I will support the president on things that are good for Western Pennsylvania. And, of course, I'll disagree with him if it doesn't help Western Pennsylvania. But as I've outlined, I think there's a number of areas where I think he's on the right track. For example, closing the corporate tax loophole that's costing us trillions of dollars a year, which my opponent refuses to do, primarily because he's taking money from the special interests and from the multinational corporations. And so he's doing their bidding. I want to go to Congress to protect the interests of Western Pennsylvania. So I don't see this as a referendum on the president. He came to Erie, had a nice visit. We were happy to have him here. But my opponent is Mr. Kelly. I do think that turnout is going to be critical in this race, and I think we need to be very. We're going to continue. My campaign is going to be continuing to encourage people to get out to vote, and I hope that your listeners will get out to vote, because this is a very important time in our history in terms of getting Congress to be more functional. And as a Marine veteran, running with a number of other veterans at this time, I think we have an opportunity to bring a level of accountability to Congress, bring a level of problem solving to Congress that it hasn't seen in recent days.
We mentioned earlier that it's the Senate that confirms, for example, judicial candidates, but it's the House, the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives, where tax initiatives start. In light of the Tax Reform Act passed at the tail end of last year, any concerns about the growing federal deficit, Ron DiNicola?
Yes, sir. I mean, I think that that's been a primary concern of mine, and it's not just me, but we know that the bill has extraordinary debt issues, and that's not me talking. That's the Joint Committee on Taxation, the Congressional Budget Office, estimates that this bill will cost Americans up to as much as $2 trillion over the next 10 years. That's in addition to the $800 billion in debt we're accumulating on an annual basis, and on top of the $22 trillion in debt that already exists. Now, don't get me wrong, because I support tax relief for working families and the middle class and small businesses and the opportunity zones. I think those are good things. But I think a bill is lopsided when it provides 83% of the benefits to 1% of the wealthiest billionaires in the multinational corporations. And that's what my opponent, Mr. Kelly, supports. I do not. I think they've got enough money. I think what we really need to do is we need to be investing in our infrastructure, creating educational and job opportunities, cutting taxes for the middle class and working families, so that they have a little bit more buying power, a little bit more saving power, and they can provide a future of opportunities and choices for their children.
I always like to wrap up our candidate chats here on WISR, Ron DiNicola, by giving candidates some time to kind of summarize and explain why they're running. So I would ask you, why are you running for Congress in the 16th District?
Well, I think that I appreciate the opportunity, Dave, to be on the show, and I think the choices between myself and my opponent could not be clearer. I support putting the federal government back on the side of working families. I support cleaning up the dark money that's influencing the political process. I want to make good on helping President Trump clean up the swamp. I want to make good on trying to close the multinational corporate tax loophole so we have more resources to deal with. I think we need to help the cities and towns that are working to expand economic opportunity in the communities. I'll be present in the communities. I'll be working with local officials. And I think that I support measures that help the working families and not benefiting the billionaires and the multinational corporations. There's a very clear difference with us, and I support legislation like the Disclose Act that will clean up the special interest money in Washington. So I think the choice is clear. I'm prepared to work with the president, roll up my sleeves, get to work with him, as long as the policies he's pursuing will benefit the working families of Western Pennsylvania and our communities that are fighting for sustainability.
He's Ron DiNicola. He is the Democratic candidate for Congress in the newly renumbered 16th District. Mr. DiNicola, I know you're on the campaign trail and in the middle of a busy day. I'm glad we were able to hook up with you and talk with you for a few minutes here today.
Thank you very, very much, Dave. Appreciate the opportunity.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 5555. The pick 3, 132, 132. The pick 4, 5885. The pick 5, 60361. The wild ball for each of those is 9. The treasure hunt, 7, 8, 16, 26, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $26,000. Don't forget the estimated jackpot for tonight's, for tomorrow night's Powerball is $750 million.
Dr. Jason Clark is an orthopedic surgeon for Butler Health System. He also volunteers as a high school team doctor.
We all hold our breath a little bit when our kids compete, because we know there's always the chance of an injury. For Eric and Sydney, that was a severely injured ankle. Fortunately, I have quick access to the tools and the people they need, giving them the best opportunity to get back out there.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care, but more importantly, we know why we have to.
Nearly 80% of adults in the United States experience neck and back pain at some point in their lives, ranging from mild to traumatic. The specialists at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat back pain with conservative options and can offer advanced surgical procedures when needed. To learn more, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-877-874-7483. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Just a reminder for you that any of the books that Dave Malarkey has on his program are available through our website. All you have to do is to go to WISR680.com, look for It's Your Turn's Dave's Book Club, and then you can look through the list of books, and you can purchase them through Amazon. That's Dave's Book Club through It's Your Turn on WISR680.com.
The Knock Knights will wrap up the regular season this Friday night, and WISR is there. Hi, everyone. This is Scott Briggs, inviting you to join Dave Bacon and me as Knock finishes out the regular season against an old friend, the Freeport Yellow Jackets. We'll have all the action beginning at 6:30 with the Coaches Show. 6:45, we're live at the stadium for a 7 o'clock kickoff. Not Football on WISR, presented in part by the Butler Health System, United Plate Glass in Butler, the United States Air Force, the John W. Thrower Cement Corporation of Saxonburg, the law firm of Dylan McCandless, King, Coulter & Graham, and Kelly's Restaurant on Main Street in Saxonburg. Also presented by Next Tier Bank and Butler Agway. It's Knock and Freeport this Friday night from Saxonburg, right here on WISR, WISR680.com, and the Trib Live High School Sports Network.
Current temperature outside 46 degrees. Look for rain moving into our area here shortly as things are moving up from the south.
Butler County wakes up with Dave weekdays from 5:30 to 9 on WISR 680 AM Butler.